We're talking summer collegiate baseball leagues here in Wisconsin and the interest picking up in non-major sports across our state. The Northwoods League is in its 26th season. You have 22 teams, including the Eau Claire Express and the La Crosse Loggards, the Rapids Rafters, and the league has advanced more than 200 players to Major League Baseball. What questions do you have for a part owner of four teams in the Northwoods League? Do you live in Madison or Green Bay, Kenosha, Rapids? What do you want to know about your hometown team? Join in at 800-642-1234. And a Northwoods team co-owner, Vern Stenman, stays with us. Vern, we've seen some teams come and go in the league. We used to have the Manitowoc Skunks and the Kenosha Croakers in the 90s. When is the time for a team to shut down?
Well, it hasn't happened in a long time. And it's funny that you mentioned those team names because they were fun. And I think that you talk about the Northwoods League and it's something that you keep on coming back to that word fun. And I think that that was part of the foundation of the league. That's part of the future of the league, is that we want people to really enjoy and have a very memorable experience when they come out. As far as shutting down goes, I mean, the businesses have worked all right in general terms. I think the quality of the ownership coming into the Northwoods League is better and better every year. Guys with all kinds of varied backgrounds from professional sports and financial institutions and things like that. So I think that the league is sitting on pretty solid ground. And I think that as they come into new markets, they're putting groups together now that are really going to be committed to those communities and be there for a long time.
Let's take a call now. Let's go to Caitlin joining us from Madison. Hi, Caitlin.
Hi.
Go ahead. What would you like to add?
So I was watching a Brewers game with some family members, and it was where the Brewers were away, and we were talking about how empty the stadium was, the away stadium, and how we think there's more fans at a Northwoods League game in Wisconsin than there are at some of the away games in other states for MLB, and just how cool it is that Wisconsin comes out and supports their, like, smaller teams as well as the Brewers.
Caitlin, do you go to Mallards games?
I actually went to college in La Crosse, so I would go to Loggers games.
Aha, yeah. What did you appreciate about those games?
Just the atmosphere was really cool, to have a bunch of friends with you and for a cheap night, go grab a beer and have some entertainment.
Caitlin, thanks so much for the call. It sounds like you have a lot of camaraderie there at the games, and it's bringing people out.
Absolutely. I think this a big part of, again, what it's all about is community, and we don't envy the major league teams either. You know, they have huge stadiums to fill up, and to get, you know, a family of four to go out on a school night to a Milwaukee Brewers game or a Chicago Cubs game with the ticket prices and the parking and all those kinds of things, it's a heavy lift to get 45,000 people to do that. Our stadiums are generally a lot smaller. We just opened up a brand new stadium in Ashwaubenon called for the Green Bay Booyah, our baseball team there. And that's a 2,100 seat stadium. And we feel like we have a chance to fill that up and really create that energy and that excitement and that fun around the game. And if we had 5,000 or 6,000 seats in that community to fill up on a nightly basis, it would be really, really hard to do. And so I think Caitlin's observation about how these stadiums feel is very consistent with our efforts to create that kind of fun environment and create that kind of scarcity around what we do that drives hopefully the fun and the community side of things. When we opened our stadium up, Capital Credit Union Park in Green Bay on Saturday night last weekend, and it was amazing just watching people talk to each other. You know, we have the huge concourse area down the third baseline and all kinds of really nice stadium seats right by the field. More than half our crowd for more than half the game stood in the concourse and talked to each other, and they didn't go down to their seats. They hung out on the top of the concourse, and they drank a beer, they ate some cheese curds, their kids bounced in the bounce house, and they talked to people. And it was really fun to hear from people to say, you know, I ran into so and so at the game tonight, I went to high school with them, I haven't talked to him in 20 years, and that was so cool, you know. And that's a lot of what this league is about as well.
How does the success of a team rely on the help from public tax dollars? Like, when you talk about stadium financing, where does the money come from?
Yeah, it's all over the place. I mean, the foundation of the league was really on coming into existing facilities and renovating them. And so here in Madison with the Mallards, this is our 19th year, we came into Warner Park that had three professional baseball teams that had come and failed in that exact same stadium that we're in today. And we kind of took a long view at it and said, let's invest in this stadium over time and let's make this something that works for us. And what you see today, there's maybe, I think our dugouts and our clubhouse is the same as it was when we came in there 19 years ago. And over time, we did that. So that was the model. I think the future of the Northwoods League is more similar to what's happening in Nashwaubenon with our team in Green Bay there, is part of economic development investments that communities are making. They're seeing these stadiums as potential entertainment hubs, and they are starting to invest in the building of stadiums. Even Bree Stevens Field here in downtown Madison and the reinvestment by the city of Madison into that facility has been a part of that entire, you know, redevelopment and catalyzed everything happening along East Washington to have that entertainment destination with the great restaurants and bars and housing and, you know, American Family coming in across the street and the new concert venue and things like that. That, I think, is the future of what we do, is kind of
synergy.
Being that piece. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go to Matt now in Monroe. Matt, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I just want to make a comment, actually, piggybacking off of exactly what you're saying about redesign, is that we have our ticket packages to the Mallards, which we absolutely love. My daughter is 5. We've had them now for 2 years, and we love that we can go for a really good cost, have great seats on the first baseline with food included, and that's kind of like part of our summer package. And one of the things we really found that we love about the Mallards is the fact that the design of the ballpark is a really good design, where if somebody wants to essentially come in and have a whole bunch of beer and enjoy the game, there's a separate kind of area for that. So the family area is really housed in kind of like this hub, and by design works really well for us.
Matt, thanks for the call. So very family-friendly oriented.
And we try to have something for everyone. It starts with families first, and all the fun in the games and things like that are focused on the families. But if you do want to have a corporate outing and you want to have a private suite, that, again, we talk about the future and what's next for us as a company, and that is something that we're starting to invest in at our stadiums across the state, is having nice indoor-conditioned spaces. In Madison here, we have the Great Dane Duck Blind, which is an all-you-can-eat-and-drink venue, and it's a fun place to go for, you know, a group of people on a Thursday, Friday, or Saturday night, probably. The nice thing is that, you know, as he noted, it is completely separated from where the families are. And so we have, you know, almost no problems ever with, you know, any sporting event obviously has the potential for people to have a couple beers. The way we handle it in our stadiums is we kind of do isolate those crowds from each other, which I think creates the right atmosphere for each individual group as they come out.
Let's go to Lisa in Janesville now. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, good morning. I think your guest already alluded to this, but I've seen this as a hunger for people to have their social needs met. And, you know, social media, we're not seeing each other. There's less avenues for social interaction. So I think that this is could only potentially grow because of just that hunger out there to talk with people, interact with people, and share time together.
Yeah, one of our slogans that we've used the last few years is a place to interact with others without logging in. It's very, you know, it's a great observation. It's something we're really proud of as a company, and something we want to continue to create more cool avenues and cool venues for people to do that.
Before we have to let you go, your company brought professional soccer to Madison this year with a team in USL League One, which is 2 tiers below the MLS. The Bucks also brought a G League team to Oshkosh last year. What is it about these lower tier leagues in Wisconsin? Is there an appetite here for sports beyond the big leagues?
Wisconsin is a great sports state. I grew up in Minnesota, so I can say this. There's something different. I mean,
oh dear.
I hope this doesn't go into Minnesota and my friends are hearing it there, but Minnesota's a little bit fair weather. They always were. And it frustrated me as a sports fan growing up in that state, and having lived now in Madison for almost 20 years, I can say that there's something different. And I think it's, you know, driven by the Badgers, driven by the Packers. Now I think the Brewers and the Bucks get into that conversation, and they've really created, I think a fandom that kind of punches above its weight class a little bit. You know, I think driven by, of course, Green Bay is the best example of that, to have an NFL team thriving in the way that it is in a city the size of Green Bay is something that you wouldn't expect. And I think what happens there, it's kind of similar to what's happening with soccer. I think that soccer is maybe that next big thing coming nationally. It's growing like crazy. And, you know, when you have a kind of a smaller group of people that are really into soccer, because I do think that there's probably more baseball fans in the state of Wisconsin than there are soccer fans as we sit here today. Those soccer fans are really passionate, though, and they are really connected to this game, and they really believe in it. And they're coming out to more and more games than we ever imagined them to come out to. And it's been fun to be reflective of that community and give them something, because it's not Mallards fans. You know, we've been shocked to see how few people are fans of the Madison Mallards and fans of Forward Madison FC. It's really serving completely different communities, and that's what we're here to do.
Well, lots to watch. Vern, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Vern Stenman is president of Big Top Sports and Entertainment, co-owner of four Northwoods League teams, the Green Bay Bullfrogs, Kenosha Kingfish, the Madison Mallards, and the Rapids Rafters. Up next, we're talking about a program to train more workers to install and maintain gas lines. What questions do you have about this risky line of business? You have a line with us right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're learning about a new program for gas utility workers here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Chippewa Valley Technical College is launching a 9-month program Monday that will lead to jobs with contractors installing gas lines or utility companies maintaining these systems. Do you work for an energy company here in Wisconsin? What do you see as the need for a program to train more workers about how to build and maintain gas lines? We're at 800-642-1234. R.C. Jensen is the gas utility construction and service instructor at Chippewa Valley Technical College. R.C., welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
So why was this program created?
Let me give you the big picture first. There are about 9 million people right now in the United States that work in the gas industry. And today, we're still 90,000 people short of having qualified employees. So there is a huge need right now in the industry.
What kind of skills will students learn in this particular program?
Well, they'll be getting their CDL. It's a Class A restricted CDL, so they'll be doing a pintle hitch CDL. They will be learning how to deal with gas. You mentioned earlier that we're going to talk about something that's a dangerous thing. Well, you know, getting out of bed in the morning can be dangerous, too. If you don't do it right... Well, we're going to teach the students how to do it right, how to make sure that everything stays safe. They're going to be able to keep themselves safe, keep the facilities safe, and more important, keep the customers safe.
Well, speaking of safety, gas lines made really tragic headlines with the explosion in Sun Prairie last July after contractors struck a natural gas line that hadn't been identified. Will the course cover what to do in case of emergencies like we saw in Sun Prairie?
Yes. In fact, they're going to be taught how to locate lines as well. But they will be put into scenarios where there are gas emergencies. We are getting virtual reality so that the students will be literally placed into a gas emergency without there being any gas there, so that they can practice and get that muscle memory while they're still trying to learn what to do. If you make a mistake there, it doesn't change anything. It doesn't hurt anyone. But we can work through it together and get it set up so that you know what you need to do and you can get it accomplished.
How big is the demand for workers, and what are the types of jobs these students will be able to do after they get this diploma?
Right now, we have about a dozen companies or so that are supporting this program here at CVTC in Eau Claire. And between those dozen or so companies, they are looking to hire 80 people next year, and when this program gets done in March, I can only have 18 in this class. So you can see that there's a huge demand right here in this area. And as I said, throughout the nation, there are 90,000 people short. we need more workers in this industry. Some of the jobs that you can do, you can be an appliance repair mechanic, gas construction, in other words, putting the stuff in the ground, gas metering, gas service mechanic, underground facilities locator, as I mentioned, an inspector for the gas crews, gas compliance work, going out and checking to make sure that everything is safe in the field.
We're talking with R.C. Jensen. He's the Chippewa Valley Technical College Gas Utility Construction and Service Instructor. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you registered for a program like this? Why did you decide to do this? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Ann now, joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Ann.
Hello. Well, we have a whole pool of workers. They're called nonviolent offenders that are in prison. So I wish you would get a hold of all these Republican legislators and work with them to start some kind of a program either in prison or get some of these people released and get into these programs right away to be trained to take some of these jobs.
And thanks for the call. What is the pipeline for people who would like to enter this type of program, RC?
Well, Ann was in Green Bay, and in Green Bay at NWTC, they have a program. Actually, they have three programs there. They have a morning, an afternoon, and a weekend program for doing the same kind of thing that we are doing here. And they have been around for about 30 years. This is our first year here. There's also a program in Beaver Dam through Moraine Park, I believe it is, Technical College, and they just started last year. So it's beginning to build a little bit. In Minnesota, there is one school that offers the class, but they don't have a teacher. The next closest one is in Mitchell, South Dakota. You remember the Corn Palace? Yeah, that place. They have a program. There's one teacher there and one program. So you can see that there are not many places that actually teach how to deal with this and how to do this gas construction, but we do need a lot of workers right now.
So this is a 9-month program, and you could perhaps work for a contractor installing gas lines. You might work for a major energy company. What are the prospects for salary coming out of a program like this?
It depends. It varies greatly. You can start at around $18 an hour if you do not get a CDL. If you have a CDL, it'll be...
And remind us what a CDL is.
Commercial driver's license.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So driving the big trucks.
Mm-hmm.
If you do have a CDL, you'll make between $22 and $25 an hour, and most of those jobs include full benefits. And that is a starting wage. Topping out after a number of years, if you move up and continue to move up, the highest you'll make is in the $50 an hour range.
You've worked in the gas industry yourself. What is your take on the state of the industry here in Wisconsin and the need for workers?
Wow, it is. We need so many people here. I've worked in the industry for 29 years in the utility industry, and the last 27 has been involved in gas. And it is we're having trouble finding people to do the work. There are a lot of people that are untrained that we have to bring on and then go through and completely train them. If we can get them on already trained, there's a lot more benefit for the company that way.
If you graduate with this diploma, is there a typical day for these workers? What would your day-to-day work be like?
Depends on exactly where you work, but let's take an average of, say, a contractor. You'll start at about 7 o'clock in the morning, and you'll work outside. That's one of the things that in the gas industry, you got to like to work outside. You're going to work outside until about 4 or 5 o'clock that night. And you're going to be digging. You're going to be using backhoes. You're going to be moving equipment around, moving tools around, and driving around with different pieces of machinery, moving them from job to job.
You're supposed to have nearly 18 students in this program. If you could have the number of spots you really need to be able to make an impact on the demand that the industry is telling you, how many spots would that be?
Well, let's see. We have 80 that are required for, that is being asked for in March. So I guess we would need to have a lot more people. Mm-hmm. We would need to have a lot more teachers here.
Let's bring in a call now. Wayne is joining us from Cambria. Hi, Wayne.
Yeah, I'd like to know what the opportunities for females in the industry would be.
Absolutely. We are always short of females. It's called a non-traditional occupation. We do have a few females that are in the industry right now, and I don't know exactly why they are not in the industry more. Most of the females that I have worked with in this area have been fantastic workers. They are detail-oriented and really take care of everything. A lot of the male workers don't accept them for some reason. I don't understand why not. But on a crew, I think that a female will do very well as a foreman as well. I think they would do very well. I know for compliance work, they do very well with that as well.
R.C. Jensen, what is retention like in this line of work? Do people stay with these careers for a lifetime? Do they go off and do other things?
They certainly can. I have 29 years. That's close to a lifetime in that one industry. And I'm not leaving the industry. I retired out of the company, but I'm staying in the industry by teaching it here. They have the opportunity to continue on for their entire career in this industry just out in the field, or if they would rather, they could move up, become a manager, supervisor, or a foreman.
So when you look at this industry day to day and what you're trying to convey to these students who are going to be entering your classroom next week, what is the most important thing that they need to know in order to go out there and hold a job in working with gas lines?
Do you want to have fun? Do you want to work outside? Do you want to work on a crew, or do you want to work by yourself? All of those are available in this industry. And it's a fun industry. It's a camaraderie. You hear about the police and the fire departments, how they build a camaraderie. The same thing with the gas side. Everybody knows each other, and we get to know about each other, and it's really a family.
Did you have to have equipment, a lot of equipment, in order to teach this diploma program? How much is mocked, so to speak, and how much is really real where you're working on real gas lines?
Well, I have to thank Alliant Energy and Xcel Energy. They both have donated so much to this program. They are huge supporters of this program here at CVTC. And we have a lot of equipment that we're going to be using. We have trenchers and plows and mini excavators, and we have backhoes. We have trucks, the service trucks, as well as crew trucks. And we'll be using all of that out in the field.
R.C., thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
R.C. Jensen is the Chippewa Valley Technical College Gas Utility Construction and Service Instructor. He joined us from our Eau Claire studio this morning. Coming up, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson joins us. There's a line for your questions about trade and immigration at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in just a minute. Maybe hear from you on the Ideas Network.